Hi, this is Emily Sobe on CKUT 90.3 FM, Jarama on the Air. I'm about to interview my good friend Aaron Kraft. Aaron is a YouTube creator. He is well known for his channel with his best friend Josiah Armstrong. Aaron makes reaction videos to popular movies and TV shows, and in the past year and a half, he's gotten a lot of recognition for it. He now takes it seriously as a full-time job, as well as his friend Joe. Hi, how are you, Aaron? Tell me about yourself.
I'm doing good. My name's Aaron, and I do YouTube with my best friend, and we are called Aaron and Joe, and me and my best friend make fun of movies on YouTube. And I'm full time with it. Dropped out of school to fully pursue it. We tackled nostalgic points for people that are like 18 to 24 years old. That's our main demographic. We blew up off of doing videos on High School Musical and Camp Rock, and pretty much what we do. Just make fun of it, poke fun at it, and also have some comedic flair to it. So we'll drop funny jokes depending on, you know, what you find funny. But so me and him just set up a camera on my desk, hit record, play the movie, and just have fun with it. And so been doing that since like late 2019, but it didn't pop off till earlier 2020, and ever since then, been doing it full time. I was making enough money to do that on my own, and I was making a lot more than my part time anyway, and I was pursuing film in college, and but YouTube's always been my full passion. So once YouTube took off, I, since I was pursuing film, I was like, might as well quit or drop out, because film isn't a very education heavy, field of work to go in. It's more about the connections and people, you know, and also experience. And not a lot of that is taught in schools. So yeah, I just went with my dreams and what I was passionate about, and, don't regret it. It's still going well, thankfully. And that's where I'm at in life right now.
Is this something you see yourself doing for the rest of your life?
Definitely. I don't know about the movie commentary or watching movies the rest of my life, but I do want to do video production for, like, you know, I just want to create videos for YouTube, and whatever that what kind of content I'll be covering, whether I'm with another friend or solo, I just want to be doing this because this is what I love. So, yeah.
Has this career so far opened any opportunities for you?
Definitely. We got management in a way, so it's opened a lot more. Ever since we got managers, we've been getting sponsored every single video, so that's just more income and just more of a something that's good to have under your belt if I ever want to do something like more traditional in another line of work. I could say I have experience doing sponsorships for companies, such as, like, I don't know, ExpressVPN, Manscaped, HelloFresh. So it's good to have these, like, big name brands under my belt or, like, in my portfolio, because it could come in handy later on. So there's that. Also, just I've talked to a few other influencers. Nothing huge quite yet, but there is. I've had some back and forths with some popular other people, and so that could open doors in the future as well. But we'll see.
How do you know exactly what video and or content you want to film next?
Honestly, a lot of it's winging it. We used to have a fair amount of movies written down, but our list is getting slimmer. And literally, it's sometimes it has to, like, on the day that we record, sometimes I'll have the last minute text other friends and be like, yo, what would be a good movie to cover? And then we'll just do it on the fly like that. So it's not very professional in that sense. We're kind of winging it, guys, but it's working out, so it's not really a big deal. But there's not a lot of pre-planning before we like film. Like nothing scripted at all, besides the sponsorships we do, because when we get sponsored, we do little like SNL type skits, I guess, where it's just funny little bits just to throw in there, keep it spicy.
Where do you see yourself a year from now?
A year from now. Dang. What if I start crying? I'm kidding. A year from now, I'm still doing YouTube. I think in a year, though, we'll probably drift away from movies. I think me and Joe would be doing... We'd probably still be doing movies, but something else as well. We'd probably be doing another form of content. And also, I do plan on expanding my personal brand and doing solo stuff, like live streaming on Twitch, and then posting funny moments from then onto my solo channel and growing my personal brand. And that's where I see myself in a year.
What is your main goal out of all of this?
My main goal, is just to keep doing this consistently and keeping consistent income coming in to afford doing this, because it's not a safe job. Like, you know, it's not like I'm getting like benefits like as you would in a full-time job if you like got a degree and went to school. Even though I am getting paid pretty well, because that's just how ads work. Ads pay pretty well, and if you have a mass people of like clicking on it, you're getting paid well. But yeah, like literally my income is reliant on how many clicks we're getting, and so my ultimate goal is just keeping this alive for the next like 20 years, I would say, because I don't really know what I'd be doing in my almost 50s if or 40s if, you know, on YouTube. But yeah, just keeping this going as long as possible, and so I can live comfortably and do what I love. That's the main goal.
How many times a week do you upload on your channel?
We upload once a week, sometimes twice. Once in a while, there'll be videos that get copyrighted, and literally we just can't post that week, and then we have to delay it to the following Monday. And we usually post every Wednesday, so sometimes there'll be like a Monday and Wednesday to make up for that previous week if it got copyrighted.
Is being a YouTuber exactly what you thought it would be? What was your expectation?
I've never really thought of this. Hold on. It really depends on like the type of content. Like, I never thought I'd be doing movie commentaries. I thought, like, when I first started YouTube, I'd be doing gaming, like video game related stuff, and so I honestly did not think I was gonna make this much money as I do. I didn't know it paid that well. I know it paid like good for like the popular people, but for us having like 270,000 subscribers, I feel like I wouldn't have expected our income the way it is. But it surprised me. It's not really what I expected in that sense. As far as like lifestyle, my day-to-day life hasn't changed, because we aren't huge. Like, we're not like millionaires, or like we're not at a level where we're buying a house or like pulling up in a convertible Corvette type shit. Or but yeah, it's about what I expected, I guess, in terms of like having the freedom of like not having to worry about clocking in to a job with like a manager. I think that's like one of the greatest parts about it. I don't have to worry about management, or like I can work my own hours and I'm my own boss. So yeah, this is like the greatest job ever.
Do you have a decent fan base?
What? Like, are they good people, or like the size of it?
Like, do you like enjoy the support from your fans?
Yes, our fans are very supportive. They're really nice, and yeah, I mean, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to answer this. I mean, like, they're cool. Like, yeah, I mean, like, our fans are really cool. Like, they're. I'm really glad that our demographic is 18 to 25 because I don't have to worry about like immature like kids like taking it too far and like screaming if they ever see us in public or like doing weird drawings or something. I don't know, just like the internet's really weird and I'm glad we haven't encountered a lot of that. We've had some weird stuff happen, but most of the time, I am really appreciative of our fans, and I think we have a cool community around the Aaron and Joe channel.
Would you ever expand what you do, as in do work on other social media platforms or like a podcast?
Yeah. So, as far as brands go, like within the next 6 months, I can see us doing a podcast. I think me and Joe would kill it at a podcast, just because like conversations we have with each other are just. They can get wild and it's pretty funny. And I think we do really well with the podcast. And we do continue planning on dropping merch. I've been having ideas of working with another company for something like, I don't know, I saw the Dolan Twins, which are other content creators, dropping candles. And I thought, as random as that is, it's a good idea to just like promote, to sell something out of the box, but since it's me and Joe promoting it, people will have more of an incentive to buy it because it's something that everyone already uses. But on top of that, it's affiliated with the channel, so fans will be like, oh, that's cool. It's just like if you see SpongeBob on a fruit roll-up box, you have more of an incentive to buy it because you're a fan of SpongeBob. You know what I'm saying? It's marketing.
What advice would you give to others who would like to start a YouTube channel as well?
I would say number one priority would be have fun at whatever you're creating, because if you're doing this for like to get popular or doing this strictly for money, it's going to drive you insane, because the fact is that editing videos is a lot of work and it's a lot of tedious. It's a very tedious process. And if you don't already know how to edit, it's going to be 10 times worse. Because it's like learning a language, and it's just a lot of technical things that go on after you record all the footage that you want. And so what separates creators from the people that have quit YouTube or like that just don't do it is like whoever is willing to take up the challenge of editing without going insane is the ultimate challenge. And so whatever you're doing, make sure you're having fun. Thankfully, like, I'm making content that is like comedic, so when I edit I'm laughing while I'm editing, so it's not a miserable experience. There's definitely some moments of really boringness like towards the end, because I've already like watched the video like 5 times and I've heard all the jokes and it's getting old. But yeah, I would say have fun at whatever you make, and you shouldn't do it for like numbers.
All right, Aaron, thank you for this interview. Now, where can they find you?
everyone can find us at Aaron and Joe. Just type in Aaron and Joe on the search bar of YouTube. That's the easiest way to find us. And so, yeah, that's about it. Yeah, I'll plug my Instagram, which is aron.craft, A-Y-R-O-N period C-R-A-F-T. And that's it. Thanks for having me.
So that's it, folks. That was my good friend Aaron Craft talking about his YouTube journey and career. I hope you enjoyed. This was Emily Sove at CKUT 90.3 FM, John Emily on the air.
Hello, I'm Stephanie Colangelo, and we're on John Abbott on the air on the CKUT radio station, 90.3 FM, which is also streaming on ckut.ca. And we're here on campus doing a feature story on John Abbott's darkroom and the technician that keeps it all together, Vincent LaFrance. So I'll be speaking with Vincent about how he got to where he is today, not only as a technician at Abbott, but his career as a film photographer, as well as his dedication to motivating students to think critically and steer them to success, not only in school projects, but inspiring and preparing them for their future. Okay, so Vincent, can you tell us where we are right now?
You are in the darkroom. The darkroom at John Abbott College. It's a brand new darkroom. It's actually interesting because when you walk in darkrooms, they're usually old and run down, and this one is actually new. There's a new ventilation. It works super well. And it's inside the beautiful Herzberg building, second floor, H250.
How long have you been a technician at John Abbott?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to tell. I lost track. I believe it's been 4 years, 3 years, or maybe 10, but I think it's closer to 3 years and a half.
What is the darkroom?
The darkroom is where you process both film and photo paper. So you develop your film here. There are closets here that are fully pitch black. And there is a station that is sort of the wet station where you develop your film with chemical products and you hang them to dry. And then you go into the dark room, the one with the red lights. So there's 25 enlargers, and this is where you make your prints. Yeah, and rinse them and dry them and hand them to your friends.
How do you feel about darkroom photography compared to digital photography?
I really like the physical aspect of it in that you can hold what you've made. And also there's the aspect of having to be really intentional with what you're doing. And every photo counts, basically. So it pushes you to take better photos.
Do you feel that there's a community aspect to darkroom photography?
For sure, yeah, there is. I mean, I feel like it's much greater than digital photography. You're actually in here developing the pictures. You got people to talk to, complimenting you.
How do the resources available in the darkroom help you improve your skills?
I mean, I find like there's a lot of help around. Like Vincent is always there to help when you need him. And like everything is like well like marked on like instructions and stuff, so I think it makes the process a lot easier because it is a hard process.
What brought you here as the technician of the darkroom at John Abbott?
I'm a freelancer, and I was just finished shooting a film, and I got paid like one shot, one paycheck. So I did what I often do. I took off for a few months and I did my own art until I ran out of cash. And since I'm a professor also in a college, and that semester I didn't have any job. So I was there, no money, no jobs. And my friend, Sarah, was leaving the job. So I heard about that. So I started doing that 2 days a week. So pretty good. It's a good job for an artist, actually. You know, it leaves a lot of freedom for you to do your own stuff. And also the schedule is flexible. You kind of tailor it according to your schedule. Every semester is sort of a new adventure. And
why do you shoot film when digital is so relatively inexpensive?
Two things. The kind of projects that I've been shooting in film for the last 10 years doesn't really work in digital photography. So that's basically the reason. I would have probably done it in digital, but I'm shooting night photography, very long exposure. I'm exposing at moonlight, 10 minutes, 5 minutes exposure. So, and that's happening in the country, in villages. So it's already black and white. So there's no point in shooting in color. And the film reacts to shadows and darkness much better than a sensor of a digital camera.
So for those who missed it, that was John Abbott College's darkroom and the technician that runs it himself, Vincent LaFrance. I'm Stephanie Colangelo, and you're listening to John Abbott on the air on the CKUT radio station 90.3 FM, which is also going to be available for streaming on ckut.ca.
Hello listeners, this is Catherine Ewick and you're listening to John Abbott on the Air on CQUT 90.3 FM. Did you know there are over 850 different species of bees living in Canada? Some are social and live in hives such as honeybees, but others, such as multiple species of bumblebees, prefer to live underground in burrows they dig for themselves. These wild bees produce little quantities of honey, but they're essential for the continued flourishing of wild and cultivated crops, as most of the pollination comes from them. Yet in these last years, the number of bumblebees has greatly decreased. Why did that happen, and how can we prevent wild bees in Canada from completely disappearing? I talked with Morgan Jackson, who works at McGill University Lehman Entomological Museum as a postdoctoral researcher, who has a PhD in insect taxonomy and phylogenetics from the University of Guelph. Why are bumblebees disappearing in Canada?
Bumblebees are facing a lot of different threats, one of them being habitat loss. So they don't necessarily have the flowers that they need to be able to pollinate and to feed from. They also are running out of places where they can make their nests, or the places that they would like to make their nests are being disturbed. They're also running into a whole bunch of different diseases and new diseases that are being introduced to them by agricultural systems where we're bringing in bees and ferrying bees around. And those bees are sometimes bringing in parasites and diseases and causing little mini pandemics within local populations of bees, things that they're not used to. And that's causing problems for their biodiversity and for them to be able to survive. We're also running out of pollination services. So flowers, we're not having as many flowers around, or the flowers aren't overlapping. And so they may go from having lots of flowers around to having no flowers around and starting to starve themselves. So, and on top of all of that, we've got global climate change, which is continuing to add to these problems where we're getting flowers blooming at the wrong time and not at the right time for the bees. And so all these different factors are starting to influence them, and we're seeing declines straight across the board across bumblebees.
As the situation of wild bees becomes very pronounced, more and more people are learning about wild bees and their importance for nature. Are you aware of the wild bees situation in Canada?
Yes, I am aware of a bee situation in Canada where there is a shortage of them, and some people and organizations are trying to save or protect them. That's about the extent of my knowledge.
I know that it is a problem and that they are going extinct, but I don't really know much about it and what implications it would have on our society.
I am aware of the situation. I'm not an expert, but I do know that if bumblebees go extinct, that will create a lot of problems for us because they pollinate our fruits and veggies. It's a really big cycle, if they go extinct, so we definitely need them around.
I know that bumblebees are endangered, and it's a really big problem because they help us with food and plants and the environment.
These were the answers John Abbott College students gave me. As the situation becomes more clear, it is important and urgent to act to prevent the extinction of wild bees and preserve their habitat in nature. What are some solutions to the situation of wild bees in Canada?
So one of the things people can do at home is to grow a diversity of different flowers, leaving your lawn to grow and flower and having different types of plants on your property if you've got it, or wherever you've got ability to keep plants going. So keeping some flowers around all throughout the year. You also want to try and keep some habitat around. You know, leaving some of the leaf and bare soil around your yard or your property will allow them to start making their nests and finding a home safely. something that we're doing here on campus on John Abbott and between McGill and John Abbott is creating these pollinator safe spaces where there's basically bare ground. We're getting rid of the grass, getting rid of the plants, and leaving bare open ground for bees like bumblebees, as well as a lot of solitary ground nesting bees who are also struggling to finally have a chance to find a nest, make a nest underground, have it undisturbed for the winter so they can rest and grow over the winter, and then emerge in the spring and continue the cycle that is hopefully going to encourage bees to live amongst us.
My name is Catherine Illick, and you're listening to John Abbott on the Air on CQT 19.3 FM, streaming on CQT.ca. While bees in Canada, such as multiple species of bumblebees, are facing some serious damage from natural habitat loss, agricultural pesticides, and numerous diseases and parasites, we can still act upon this situation, for example, planting diverse flowers and plants in our gardens. It is time to save wild bees and save our future.
Hello, my name is Zachary Blanchard alongside Gabrielle Vitali. For those of you who have worked in customer service, we all know how difficult it could be. Whether it be rude customers, awful salaries, poor management, etc., working in customer service is a struggle. And for those of you who have not worked in customer service, you may take it for granted.
Hi, welcome to Tim Hortons. What can I get you?
As a former drive-thru worker for Tim Hortons, I despised my job. We would constantly be short-handed, which meant I had to do other people's jobs in their absence, which left me feeling stressed and overwhelmed for hours at a time. As my shifts got longer, I was finding myself making more mistakes as I had to do things I was never trained to do. With these mistakes came angry customers that did not sympathize or seem to care about me or my struggles to serve them. I often went home after my long shifts feeling depressed and guilty. Management never seemed to hire new people, and so it got to a point where I quit, as I could not endure the stress and anxiety I would feel for 8 hours at a time any longer.
As a former employee of Tim Hortons, I found the days getting longer and longer, with customers paying no regard to any mistakes I ever made.
Don't tell me you forgot my drink!
Even when I was new to the job. The lack of training was also very difficult to deal with because I was trained in how to do things on the spot and ended up messing up some customers' orders and got me in trouble with the bosses and the customers. The constant pressure of me thinking I would do the job wrong has been overwhelming and has ended up leading to a mental decline. We also got an interview from a Canadian Tire employee who wanted to remain anonymous.
Our store was a mess and nearly half the employees didn't know where specific things were because we didn't even know if we had them in stock. Time after time, I would have to send customers over to my supervisor. Working primarily in a French area was pretty brutal as well, because my French isn't refined, and customers who thought I couldn't speak French started to flame me for things I couldn't help them with. There are some very understanding people there as well, who knew the struggle of being there and being new, and were patient with me, but that wasn't the case all the time.
Whether it be the management, the people, or the pay, working in customer service is very difficult. It is important to treat everybody with kindness and respect, as everybody is human and makes mistakes. I'm Zachary Blanchard, reporting alongside Gabrielle Vitali, and you're listening to John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Now Carob Patties is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Carob Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Carob Patties, the champions of Montreal.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time.
soleil. Un peu partout, y'a fait chanter, vive la Noël. Y'a fait célébrer la naissance de Jésus-Christ. Son frère sans discrimination. Minuit sonnait. Ça crève la messe qu'après chercher la délivrance. Ça crève chercher quand c'est yo joigne au réveillon. Pour yo capable pour les boissons. Noël, faites la joie, faites l'amour. Jour de réconciliation pour toute cette fête fâcheuse. Noël, c'est jour chrétien réuni. On s'embrouille la prière. Chanteux, c'est le Dieu. Noël, le monde si mon tête collée. Riche comment, paille l'homme. Pour y en fêter. Que tout si mon comprend. Y'a tout dans la vie. Allons belle époque, c'est Noël, c'est dans la...